another Friday edition of the Dynamic Duo. This is the Boy Wonder, a.k.a. Kevin Barrett. I do the show with co-host Jim Fetzer. Jim does Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. I'm on Mondays and Fridays bracketing the weekend, and we're coming into a very nice weekend, or so I hope. Today I have a show that touches on the material that I'm most interested in, that is the 9/11 anomalies, shall we say. And the question that we're going to ask today is, just what happened to the World Trade Center? After all, in more than 100 years of constructing tall buildings, that is the technical name for steel frame buildings over, I think, 15 stories or something, it's been, they've been going up for over a century, and never, never in the history of tall building construction anywhere on the planet has any tall building ever suffered complete collapse for any reason other than controlled demolition with explosives. Well, there have been a couple of destroyed tall buildings down through history, and they've been earthquake victims. They fall over on their sides. They break off and topple if there's an earthquake, and the building is still there. The complete disappearance of a tall building is unprecedented. It's never happened. And supposedly, we had three tall buildings on 9/11 just disappear, boom, straight down into their own footprints, free fall speed from fire. Now, there were allegedly plane crashes on two of those three buildings, but the plane crashes did not directly affect the structural integrity of the building, according to the experts. And we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking about the evidence, the overwhelming evidence that the World Trade Center was taken down in controlled demolitions. And there are, in fact, at least 12 characteristics of controlled demolitions that were exhibited by these building so-called collapses, or should we say explosions, that are, any one of these is enough to tell you it's a controlled demolition, because there's never been an event in history, except for the many controlled demolitions, that have exhibited these characteristics. For instance, straight down, coming straight down, that's one. At free fall speed, that's two. Suffering total collapse into its own footprint, the whole building disappearing into a little pile of rubble straight down there on its footprint, that's three. Eyewitness reports of explosions, that's four. Pulverization of concrete, the most of the concrete in the towers seems to have been turned into slurry powder, that's is that five? I don't know. Melted steel, all kinds of pools and rivers of melted steel. How did you melt steel with jet fuel? Doesn't happen. That's I guess that we're up to six now. Pyroclastic people-eating clouds. These pyroclastic slurry cloud flows of dust and debris are characteristic only of controlled demolitions and volcanic eruptions. Massive people-eating pyroclastic clouds chase people through the streets of New York. What are we up to now? Seven, I guess. Number eight, multi-ton steel beam fragments flung upwards and outwards. Well, that wouldn't normally happen in a controlled demolition, I guess, but there's no other way to explain it. Impaling buildings 500 feet away. Number nine, I guess, we have squibs. You know, those famous little puffs of explosive smoke well in advance of the demolition wave. As you go down the building, we have seismic evidence. I think we're up to number 10 now. We have the North Tower antenna drop showing that the core columns were cut first, number 11. And finally, number 12, we have residues of explosives found by chemical testing. And then along with those characteristics of controlled demolitions, we have human bone fragments, tiny, like centimeter-long human bone fragments in less than a centimeter. They're found on top of neighboring buildings hundreds of feet away from the towers. How did you get little tiny smithereens of human bones blown over onto the tops of neighboring buildings from a gravity-driven, quote-unquote, collapse? It's ridiculous. Who's claiming that the World Trade Center was brought down by planes that brought some jet fuel fires into these buildings? They should be ashamed of themselves. Well, I'll tell you who. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, has put out reports on two of these three collapses, the North and South Tower collapses. We're still waiting to hear from them on Building 7. They're saying now that they're actually considering the possibility of quote-unquote hypothetical blast events being involved in the destruction of Building 7, which was never hit by a plane. We'll see about that. But FEMA has a pretty ridiculous story about how this happened. It basically is that the planes hit the towers, transformed themselves into shrapnel that stripped off the fireproofing from all the way around the steel members, took off all the fireproofing, and then the fires got up to near 1,800 degrees, which was enough to weaken the steel. In reality, their own tests showed that the fires, in virtually no cases, got even over 500 degrees Fahrenheit. And these fires supposedly led to weakening of steel, leading to collapse initiation. But they can't tell us what happened after the initiation because there's no way that the top piece of the building is going to fall through the bottom, much larger piece, at free fall speed, just as fast as it would have fallen if it had been dropped from an airplane. So what's going on with FEMA? Well, I'm bringing on an expert today to tell us. That's Jerry Liepart. Jerry Liepart is a member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. He's an attorney. He has filed the request for corrections from FEMA regarding its ludicrous report about the destruction of the World Trade Center. And we're hoping that it will get a response from FEMA. And Jerry Liepart is going to be at the Madison Conference, sponsored by Scholars for 9/11 Truth. It's called The Science and Politics of 9/11, What's Controversial, What's Not. That's happening August 3rd to 5th. You can actually meet Jerry and a whole lot of other cool people if you register. And to do that, just go to 911scholars.org. That's 911scholars.org. And come on into Madison, and I'll be there too. Anyway, welcome, Jerry. How you doing?
Good, Kevin. Nice to be on the show with you, and I look forward to seeing you in Madison next weekend.
Yeah, I look forward to meeting you, too. It should be great. And, hey, I appreciate your work with that request for corrections. It looks like it's a pretty interesting task you've set for yourself there.
Well, I think that the approach does have the possibility of bearing fruit as we go forward, Kevin. Now, I look forward in this presentation, in this afternoon show, of, sort of getting into the details of the requests for correction, why they were filed, what they might lead to, and the other particulars. And so without any specific agenda on how we might do that, I think we can just start. And the first thing I should call attention to, Kevin, is that the actual governmental agency involved here is NIST, or the National Institute of Standards and Technology, rather than FEMA.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah. Well,
NIST there. But
a little spaced out today. Yeah, with a request for corrections from NIST. FEMA had put out an earlier, much less detailed report. And
exactly.
NIST is, of course, the main report, and that's what I was referring to when I erroneously said FEMA. Sorry, Jerry.
That's correct. So basically, a total of four requests for correction have been filed. I have the honor of working with as counsel three of the four. The first one that was filed in date order was that filed by Edward Haas of the Muckraker Report. Ed's RFC does focus primarily upon issues surrounding WTC 7, and I can tell you that the request for correction that he has filed may lead to other legal action, which I hope to be able to speak more fulsomely about next weekend in Madison.
Well, that sounds good, because Building 7, of course, is the ultimate smoking gun of 9/11. And we'll be back with more talk with Jerry Liepart. This is Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo. Stay tuned. And we're talking about the destruction of the World Trade Center and the NIST report that tries to explain it away. I earlier mistakenly said FEMA. Actually, it's some of the same guys, as I recall, Gene Carley, Matt Asosin, the same characters who explained away the Oklahoma City bombing, then were brought in to do the FEMA report on the World Trade Center, and then they just moved them over to NIST for the final and more detailed NIST report. And so today I'm speaking with Jerry Liepart, an attorney who is filing a request for correction to NIST. And, Jerry, you just said that the first of these four requests for correction that have been filed was filed by Ed Haas of the Muckraker Report and mainly concerned Building 7.
Yes, and let me continue with that thought. The basic structure that NIST is using for purposes of doing the World Trade Center reporting is to rely both on internal staff within NIST, and also to contract out much of the work and to rely on consultants. Now, Ed, for his part, did some very important work in basically uncovering the existence of conflicts of interest between, on the one hand, the contractors who were being brought in to work on the preparation of the report, and the event itself. For instance, Silverstein Properties is one of the consultants on what happened to the World Trade Center while simultaneously being or having an ownership interest, a significant ownership interest in the buildings within the complex.
And an insurance interest, too, I might add.
Exactly. So in further assessment and analysis, we also see that among the major contractors retained by NIST are some of the companies and corporations that are basically at the heart of the military-industrial complex. And that also has a major impact or a major interest and significance in connection with the destruction of the Twin Towers as well. As you know, Kevin, a number of people who are both members of scholars and who are prominent in the 9/11 truth community have come up with theories of destruction of the World Trade Center that center on the use of exotic weaponry to bring about the destruction of the Twin Towers. And there are also those who cast a significant doubt on whether jetliners actually crashed into the World Trade Center with a growing and, I contend, an overwhelming body of evidence confirming that it was only the appearance of jetliners and that, in fact, no such thing occurred, and that what we saw was basically TV fakery and an illusion in the nature of a psychological operation.
And indeed, we'll have some of the leading figures among the people who make those arguments at this conference, as well as people who who make other arguments. Ace Baker is a leading expert in video fakery, and Morgan Reynolds has been doing some work on that, too. Reynolds, of course, is a former member of the Bush administration itself who has publicly accused his own administration of carrying out 9/11, demolishing the World Trade Center. So
indeed,
there'll be some interesting folks at this conference in Madison. People should go to 911scholars.org and check out the whole list. Go ahead.
Exactly. And I will say that I have the honor of representing Dr. Morgan Reynolds. He is also one of those who has filed a request for correction and has also taken other legal action, which, as I said, I hope to be able to present in greater detail next weekend. Now, getting back to Ed Haas and his request for correction and additional legal action, as you pointed out, NIST has yet to issue a report on what caused the destruction of World Trade Center Building Number 7. A year ago at this time, NIST had made a public pronouncement, Kevin, that it would issue its report on Building 7 toward the end of the year 2006.
We're still waiting, aren't we?
And they made that announcement to drum roll and for effect. Okay,
just like that plane that that we were supposed to see going into the Pentagon. There was a huge buildup.
Exactly.
And, where's the plane?
Exactly.
And so, hey, Nist, where's the report on Building 7? We heard the drum roll.
Yeah. And so then at the end of year 2006, NIST then said, well, you know, we're actually going to issue this report in the spring of 2007. And it was only at the end of the year 2006, Kevin, that for the first time NIST did publicly indicate that they would, as you mentioned, consider hypothetical blast events as a possible cause, while simultaneously saying, and this in their public pronouncements, that they had seen no evidence of any such event or of controlled demolition. Now, that is one of the points that Ed Haas actually challenges as being false.
Could you take a look at the film of Building 7 coming down and not see any evidence of controlled demolition?
Well, it's actually a little more damning than that, because the NIST report on the destruction of the Twin Towers that was publicly issued as a final report in October of 2005 does say that, in effect, it acknowledges the existence of evidence of controlled demolition. The language of the official NIST report that we call NC Star 1, which is its acronym, says that it could find no corroborating evidence of controlled demolition. But note that phrase. To say that you don't have corroborating evidence, on one hand, is an acknowledgement that there is some evidence on the other. Now, and that's not to mention the declaration, the famous PBS broadcast featuring the owner, Larry Silverstein, saying that, they pulled Building 7. Okay? Now, whether he later retracted that statement or not, a statement like that is evidence. It's in the nature of an admission. And even if you retract it, then it's still evidence in the nature of a prior inconsistent statement.
Well, that's what I would have thought. But hey, you're the lawyer, Jerry. Okay, we're going to have to come back again after this next break. And so we will. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Jerry Liebhart about NIST and the destruction of the World Trade Center. Stay tuned. You're listening to GCNLive.com. This is your host, Kevin Barrett, on the Dynamic Duo Show. And today I'm talking with Jerry Liebhart about the request for corrections that he filed with NIST, which has put out a rather incomplete, shall we say, and misleading report about the destruction of the World Trade Center. It's astonishing to me, Jerry. You were just talking about the evidence that Building 7 was demolished, including Larry Silverstein's apparent confession to that effect. But it's astonishing to me that after almost 6 years, NIST still has no idea why Building 7 came down, and yet the BBC knew exactly why it came down before it came down. They actually reported that it had collapsed because of debris from the falling towers, and they made this report 20 minutes before it actually did come down. Apparently somebody was reading from the script a little early.
Well, that's script is a key word here. 9/11 is essentially a psychological operation that probably in its scope and magnitude is unprecedented in human history. Now, the fact is that as a psychological operation, it is ongoing. What we next weekend will likely have to confront in Madison, Kevin, is the fact that except for a core group of people who are actively working on 9/11 issues, and then what might be called sort of a gnawing suspicion that hovers somewhere just below the threshold of consciousness for most people. Basically, 9/11 has now been all but forgotten, and amongst the the population as a whole, and there would appear to be very little willingness to examine in detail what happened, or to go to that place, Kevin, that requires us as a society to ask the question seriously: hey, was this self-inflicted?
Well, it seems like more and more people have been waking up to this. I've been involved in the 9/11 truth movement since the very beginning of 2004, and it has been growing since then. Back then, it was a very small minority who even understood that there was a debate out there about this. And today, I think it's really political dynamite. It's, you know, we have polls showing that the percentage of people who say it was high treason is, you know, was 37 or 36% last year, and is probably up to at least 40, if not 50, by now. And at the same time, we heard that only 16% believe the government's telling the truth. So I think, in terms, its effectiveness as a PSYOP has been severely compromised by the successes of the 9/11 Truth Movement. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to keep moving forward on those successes and link 9/11 Truth to the possibility of the next big false flag operation, which is why I've been putting out these 3 foot, 2 foot by 3 foot inside job signs, which people can stockpile and then put up in public if there's another big false flag event. And that's a kind of a form of prevention and deterrence, and it will also organize people to react and get out there and be proactive in case it happens, to stop this PSYOP if it happens again before the before it ever sinks in.
And that is good planning. And I support those efforts. That is what it takes. It takes persistence. As we're up against an unlimited budget, total control of all media communication, with the exception of you know, some independent you know, internet radio, hint hint, such as what we're doing.
Yeah, good for GCNLive.com, huh?
And you know, and some parts of the internet. So certainly the task is difficult, but I think that's a segue into a continuation of the discussion on the delay in the issuance of the WTC-7 report, because, Kevin, after all, it only takes one acknowledgement of one building having been destroyed in whole or in part by controlled demolition to basically unravel the 9/11 PSYOP.
So that would blow the whole case wide open,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, it just takes one. Now, I think before I continue with 7, I do want to say that some of the most astonishing work on the destruction of the World Trade Center has been done by Dr. Judy Wood, who I also have the honor of representing, both in terms of an RFC that she filed and that is presently pending, and in connection with other legal steps that, as I said, I hope to be in a position to speak more on, you know, next weekend when the clients are actually present as well, and when, you know, I as an attorney would then have a, you know, a better basis for, you know, speaking on their behalf.
Yeah, that's a reason for people to come to the conference in Madison.
Yeah, I do hope we get a good turnout. I know that there will be, you know, a core group of people there, and that it really is going to be an important gathering. And I'm very pleased, Kevin, that you put in a plug for the conference earlier on the show today. I'd just like to add that, you know, anyone who can get to Madison, Wisconsin next weekend for, you know, either the whole weekend or any part of it, August 3rd to 5th, do come to the conference.
And I will be actually debuting the Inside Job plastic roll banners, of which there are more than 3,000 now printed up, and they're cheap enough so that people can get whole rolls of 167 for only $250, buck and a half per 2 foot by 3 foot banner. You can tear them off in any combination you want, make a 9 foot long sign by tearing off three, and if there's another event, it will be absolutely imperative to get these signs all over the place. Webster Tarpley's talking about maybe the D.C. people are going to get a couple of rolls and be able to completely wrap up the White House. Can you imagine another big terror attack happening in the country and the White House is wrapped up in signs saying inside job?
Excellent. Let me finish with WTC-7 in this segment, and then I'll discuss the other one of the other RFCs in the next segment, Kevin. A month ago, NIST announced yet another delay in the issuance of the WTC-7 report, now saying that it will be out toward the end of this year. And I think you know, without being specific, let me just speak hypothetically, okay? Perhaps it's time to think about obtaining a legal injunction here, as there's no rational reason for, you know, postponements like this, serial postponements, you know, being announced on the eve of one self-imposed deadline. They then just continue to push this thing out further and further. So we need to ask the question, what is going on? Two of the major contractors that NIST has entered into contracts with to help it prepare the WTC7 report are two companies that have expertise in what we think may be causal links to the destruction of the World Trade Center. The companies are Applied Research Associates, Inc., and Science Applications International Corp. The first goes by the initials ARA, and the second goes by the initials SAIC. Both ARA and SAIC have extensive involvement in the research on development and implementation of directed energy weapons. That's who makes them, Kevin.
Interesting. And they're being asked to investigate the destruction of the buildings.
They were the two prime contractors in the study that was done, the NCSTAR 1 report.
Okay, SAIC, we'll pick this up in just a moment, so stay tuned, folks. And today I'm talking with Jerry Liebhardt, who is coming to Madison for the Scholars for 9/11 Truth-sponsored conference called Science and Politics of 9/11, What's Controversial and What's Not. And hey, Jerry, let's face it, these controversial exotic weapons hypotheses are controversial indeed. There are a lot of people out there who are uneasy with them. The two big ones that seem to really be controversial in the 9/11 Truth community are the ones associated with your very clients, Judy Woods and Morgan Reynolds. Morgan Reynolds has been interested in evidence that the World Trade Center may not have been hit by any planes at all, much less the ones we were told they were hit by. Judy Woods, of course, is a pioneer in research on the potential use of directed energy weapons to take down the World Trade Center. Of course, I don't know. Some people like to think that it would be, you know, what we really have to do is focus on stuff that we can either prove or use politically to get the new investigation that then might break open whatever really happened. And those people often point out that there is very strong eyewitness evidence as well as all sorts of other evidence for the use of explosives. So why commit public relations suicide by talking about exotic hypotheses, you know, when we're already being labeled crazy conspiracy theorists? So what's the other side of that argument, Jerry?
Okay, thanks, Kevin, for that introduction that I think puts the issue right out there, you know, on the table. Now, it's I think the ultimate conclusion is that there is no definitive answer to the question you have raised. It's controversial and it's going to remain controversial. And if there's any part of controversy that people are uncomfortable with, then let me know and I will try to explain it again. So, speaking, you know, personally, in the way that that I go about assessing information in my everyday law practice, I have to rely on evidence. And evidence is something that is midway between scientific truth. It's because evidence is not necessarily scientific. But evidence is also more than a guess. Okay? So just applying the rules that I use as a lawyer for being able to present information. What I can tell you and the listeners, Kevin, is this. There is more admissible evidence associated with the theory that the World Trade Center was destroyed by directed energy weapons than there is admissible evidence for any single other theory out there that has been promulgated.
Well, that's an interesting claim. Stephen Jones, who's been associated with the explosives and especially the thermite hypotheses, argues that the mere existence of thermite proven by chemical residue tests is enough to get an arson investigation. He would claim that there's, along with all of the numerous reports of explosives, that this would be enough to really basically prove the case. So what is there for what kind of evidence for the directed energy hypothesis is stronger than that?
What is stronger than that is that the directed energy weapons theory is most strongly supported by the visual record. This consisting in the photographic record, the video record. You started out your show, Kevin, by describing characteristics of controlled demolitions. Well, until the World Trade Center episode, the tallest building ever to have been brought down by a controlled demolition was a building in Detroit, Michigan, the J.L. Hudson's building. That building stood something on the order of about 450 to 470 feet in height. And there was a lot of angst carried out over many months of very careful planning, Kevin, because there was some doubt about whether a building of that height could be brought down in a controlled fashion. And there was an awful lot of worry and concern that the building would not fall right and that it would cause a lot of damage to neighboring structures and other concerns of that nature. Well, take a look at 9/11. Here you had two 110-story skyscrapers, which when built were the tallest structures, in the world.
So they must be about twice as tall as that one in Detroit.
Three times as tall.
Really?
More than three times as tall. The Twin Towers stood 1,360 feet, and the Hudson's building was less than 500. World Trade Center 7 was taller than the Hudson's building by a significant factor of approximately 100 feet, and yet it fell in perfect fashion, scarcely sprinkling any debris whatsoever beyond its own footprint, Kevin.
That's right. Some demolition experts have looked at it as a kind of a miracle of the art.
A miracle, of course. That visual record, together with the characteristics that can be seen taking place, and Dr. Judy Wood has done an exquisite job of assessing the detail of this visual record, including the nature of the particles, the dust, most recently, Kevin, precise attention to the detail of the cleanup mechanism. Now, in law, we know that a lot of serious incidents are unraveled not so much on the basis of what happened, but on the basis of how they were cleaned up. And therein lies a significant clue, I think, as to the direction that the work that Dr. Wood has undertaken is currently going in.
Can you give us any specifics about that cleanup research?
Well, that cleanup research starts by focusing on a couple of things: the nature of the dust. There are dust studies that were undertaken, one by the U.S. Geological Survey, the official, yet another official governmental organization, and the sample results that they have published show a significant number of anomalies that call into question whether or not that data may have been manipulated, which would be consistent with a DEW or a directed energy weapons hypothesis.
So, also, what did they manipulate?
Well, they manipulated, Kevin, the iron content in some of the samples. And specifically, Kevin, they also manipulated where the samples were taken from. It might surprise you to know that virtually no samples, no dust samples, were taken from inside the actual perimeter of the World Trade Center complex itself.
That's odd. That does seem like an interesting oversight.
Oh, yes, an interesting oversight. In addition to that, one interesting aspect of this cleanup process centers on bringing into the mix those entities and organizations, Kevin, that are actually involved with the nation's stockpile of directed energy weapons, because the U.S. does have a significant stockpile of such weapons.
But how much information about these weapons is available to those who don't
have
security clearances?
A fair amount is available to the general public. And the question can and should be put to those people, did what happened consist in conditions that are what would be expected from the use of such weapons?
And that's an interesting question. We'll be exploring it at the upcoming conference. Go to st911.org to find out more about the conference in Madison, Wisconsin. And we'll be back with Jerry Liepart and Kevin Barrett on Dynamic Duo in just a moment. So stay with us for the next hour. I'm Kevin Barrett, and I'm talking today with Jerry Liepart, a member of Scholars for 9/11 Truth, who will be attending the Madison conference entitled Science and Politics of 9/11, What's Controversial and What's Not. And this conference is about controversy, but it's not just about one side of the controversy. All people from all viewpoints were invited. And along with my guest Jerry Liepart and his clients Morgan Reynolds and Judy Wood, and the other another noted video fakery expert, Ace Baker, who represent a particular wing of the controversy, we also have Doug Rocky, a noted depleted uranium expert, formerly in charge of the U.S. Army's DU efforts after Gulf War I. Doug has said some amazing things to me about 9/11, about what was known at the in the higher echelons of the military during the late 90s, about what was coming. And he's a truth speaker about 9/11, so he's worth seeing. There's Loren Murray, another great DU expert and activist, international law expert Alfred Weber. He's writing the 9/11 Independent Prosecutors Act and trying to implement it in international 9/11 war crimes tribunals. He's working with David Griffin on that issue. There's Barbara Honecker, whose research on the Pentagon event is indispensable. And, in fact, you need to check out her work by Googling Clock That Broke the Lie and maybe Pentagon, and you'll get there. Barbara is a great researcher. Her essay is in a book by Jim Mars, who's going to be there. Jim Mars is a best-selling author who wrote one of the two books that Oliver Stone's JFK movie was based on. And we'll also have Dave Von Kleist, who has a fantastic new movie out on 9/11 that you'll have to catch. I'm blanking on the name. You remember the name, Jerry?
I don't remember the name.
Oh, man, it's a great movie,
right?
And Ripple Effect, 9/11 Ripple Effect.
Yes.
And that's a follow-up to his earlier film, In Plain Sight. Ripple Effect is very, very good. There's Rick Ryder, who's associated with Morgan Reynolds, a grad student in engineering or physics, I believe. Bob Detrakis, professor from Ohio, who's an expert on election fraud as well as space weapons. We're going to have a lot of expertise on space weapons there. And, of course, Fetzer Man himself, my co-host Jim Fetzer, who does this show on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. So it's an interesting bunch. All sorts of opinions will be represented. I'll be there. And I haven't completely bought into any particular exotic hypothesis yet, but I'm interested in them. I'm interested in hearing out the people who are proposing them. I'm interested in taking a look at the evidence. And so why don't we pick up where we left off then, Jerry, in discussing the admissible evidence that some form of directed energy weapons were used on 9/11 to destroy the World Trade Center.
Okay, and that evidence is varied, sundry, and also quite deep, and it continues to accumulate. Now, at the end of the last segment, Kevin, I think we had segued into the area that number one, acknowledges that the U.S. does in fact have a vast stockpile of directed energy weapons. And they are under the auspices of a joint military grouping that is entitled the Directed Energy Directorate. The Directed Energy Directorate is
that's pretty direct.
That's pretty direct. That's correct. You know, there's no secret about it. They have facilities at Kirtland Air Force Base in New Mexico. They are directly linked with a number of other facilities around the country, including at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base in Ohio, at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida, and of course Los Alamos, and at other of the nation's weapons research facilities. The reach of directed energy weapons goes everywhere or throughout the range from crowd control weapons that are not lethal, all the way up to very high energy laser weapons that are awesome in their destructive potential. In fact, some of the larger implications of the events of 9/11 go to the issue of whether or not that stockpile of weapons is firmly under the control of the military chain of command. And that question, you know, not that one would necessarily take a great deal of comfort from just knowing that the weapons are firmly under that control, but let's consider the implications that, you know, that the weapons may not be firmly under that control.
Now, when it's been widely reported that there are these kinds of special projects that are kind of in the margins of the military-industrial complex that get an awful lot of independence, and there are black budget operations that are out there doing all sorts of interesting and cutting-edge things that may not be fully reporting to even the chain of command, much less to Congress.
Okay, now, herein lies the one of the assumptions that the work that my clients and I are undertaking, Kevin, and our assumption is that even though on one level what we are doing, what my clients are doing, and what I have the honor of working with them in doing, is that they are challenging the official governmental reports. But I can tell you, Kevin, you know, and the audience, that the response that we are getting from the governmental entities is not terribly defensive. They do not seem to be treating us as if we are, you know, to be shunned. As a matter of fact, Kevin, do you know what? The governmental agencies that we are dealing with are showing signs of being quite cooperative with us.
Now, which agencies are these?
NIST and, shall I say, the court system.
That's interesting, because given that NIST put out such a ridiculous report on the destruction of the towers, one would expect them to be pretty defensive.
They're not. And what this suggests is that if you go down the road of the hypothesis that the apparatus of government has been taken over by a rogue element, you know, call it the military-industrial complex, call it the powers that be, you know, call it whatever you like. But let's just assume that there may be something to that. Well, for those people who work in governmental agencies, you know, as their career, meaning that they are, you know, everyday, you know, professional and administrative people who work for the governmental agencies, you know, you can call them bureaucrats. Now, they have, that's how they earn their living. You know, they go to work, they have to follow, you know, a structure, a regimen. You know, they have certain authority up to certain limits. You know, everyone has a defined role. But if those people also detect that something is amiss in the way their organizations are being run, it would follow that they would be cooperative to such challenges.
And that's one of the beautiful things about the 9/11 truth movement. Just about everybody is on our side except for the handful of people who actually did this horrible crime.
Right.
All right. We'll be back in a few more minutes here for more conversation. This is Kevin Barrett talking with Jerry Liebhardt. And we are wandering through strawberry fields where nothing is real, where the planes that hit the World Trade Center towers may not have been real, where the apparent fire-induced collapses may not have been real. In fact, the apparent controlled demolitions with explosives might not even have been real if there were some directed energy weapons involved. Although, personally, it seems to me that they would have to be viewed as a partial cause, given that we do have so many reports of actual explosions from the towers. But there is, of course, the argument that the explosions may have been diversions or red herrings. In any case, it's all going to be on the table, along with all sorts of other stuff, at the Madison Conference coming up August 3rd to 5th. You can go to 911scholars.org to find out more about it. And my guest today will be there. It's Jerry Liebhardt, an attorney who has filed a request for corrections with NIST on behalf of Scholars for 9/11 Truth. And we were just talking about how NIST and other government bodies are actually being more cooperative with these requests than might have been expected.
Yes, I think we can sort of wrap that up by indicating that if, as we suspect, that the governmental agencies may have been, or that NIST in particular may have been steered toward the inaccurate and incomplete report on what caused the destruction of the Twin Towers, and that NIST may be being forced to issue these serial delays in the WTC-7 report, not on the basis of their own internal procedures, but on the basis of, you know, corruption within the governmental agencies. You know, pretty much across the board, we've seen just, you know, one anecdote after another of how what used to be, you know, trusted and well-run, you know, federal agencies are, you know, at this time, either non-functional, dysfunctional, or, you know, or not able to, you know, to carry out their tasks and their functions. You know, it was not just FEMA during Katrina that, you know, is not able to function properly. You know, a lot of the governmental agencies seem to be dysfunctional. There's a fiscal dysfunction, and a number of other agencies were told, for example, that the Consumer Protection Agency, apparently, you know, those employees there who remain are all, or many of them are, you know, seeking other jobs because of what has been done to, you know, to their effectiveness. You know, FDA, EPA, you know, a lot of these organizations that, you know, in the past had a reputation for at least being, you know, balanced and able to act in the public interest, are now thought to be, you know, pretty much controlled by the industries or the lobbies for, you know, for commercial concerns.
Well, it's all part of a big privatization of power, it seems
that's
to
right.
me.
That's
the
right.
Cold War ended. The private interests seem to be just gobbling up everything in sight. And this is a bit of a tangent, Jerry, but as you may know, GCNLive.com is a sort of a Patriot Movement-affiliated outfit, and a lot of folks in our audience are highly aware of the issue of the privatized control over our currency. maintained by the Federal Reserve, which is neither federal nor has any reserves. It's actually a bunch of extremely wealthy private banking interests that essentially took over the USA back in 1913 and have been gobbling up power ever since. But my point here is that people on the left of the political spectrum normally critique private power and urge more public oversight and transparent public power. And yet with the issue of the Federal Reserve, perhaps the most single, you know, biggest private power outfit on the planet, the left is strangely silent about the private control and monopoly over most of the world's currency.
I agree. I mean, there should be more attention to that issue. That just as you say, the Federal Reserve is neither federal, and there is no reserve. And there's that deep-seated commitment to capitalism in American thought. America just simply has no opposition in that respect. I think, you know, my take on that issue, Kevin, is that, you know, the reason why the so-called left, hasn't been more proactive is that there simply is no left in the American, in the American political perspective. I mean, you have Republican and Republican light. You know, that's and I think we see that being borne out in the inability of a Congress supposedly under the control of the supposed opposition party being able to do next to nothing about stopping the illegal war.
Well, that's just mind-boggling, isn't it?
It is.
The president's popularity is tanking, below freezing on the Fahrenheit scale, and the vice president doesn't even have half of that. I mean, he's about to go into negative, below zero figures. And,
right.
And this war is universally acknowledged to be a disaster. And yet, we elect a Congress specifically to end the war, and they're just sitting there with their thumbs where the sun doesn't shine. What's
exactly.
Going on?
Exactly. I mean, it's a complete betrayal of the public trust. And so much for the left. With that, Kevin, let me just return for a moment to the evidence in support of the directed energy weapons hypothesis, most forcefully put forward by Dr. Judy Wood, and the emphasis on the cleanup. An interesting and little-known segment of that cleanup involves the amount of dirt that was trucked into the World Trade Center site and used apparently for damping purposes. So the fact that you can prove visually how much dust was brought in allows you to go to the directed energy people and ask them, hey, if directed energy weaponry are used, how do you control the residual effects? Would you use dirt, and if so, for what purpose?
Okay. I'm not actually familiar with the evidence of damping the dust at the at Ground Zero, but I'll be looking into it. And I do hope to have Judy Wood on my show at some point. I did invite her, and she hasn't responded yet. In any case, we'll be back here with Jerry Liepart. This is Kevin Barrett right here on Dynamic Duo. Stay with us. I'm having a really interesting conversation with Jerry Liepart, an attorney who is filing a request for corrections with NIST concerning the destruction of the World Trade Center. And we're talking about the upcoming conference where Jerry and I will both be appearing in Madison, Wisconsin, August 3rd to 5th. Go to 911scholars.org to find out more and to register. Well, we're talking about these exotic hypotheses such as the possible use of directed energy weapons to destroy the World Trade Center. The pulverization of the concrete is one physical effect that some people argue may have resulted from this kind of energy. The argument would be that explosives normally, well, certainly steel-cutting explosives that would just allow the building to come down because of its own gravity, its own weight, would not explain this kind of pulverization. Everyone admits that. So people who were talking about explosives and chemical energy being used to bring down the Trade Center have to hypothesize quite a bit of explosive power. Well, as far as I'm concerned, this particular avenue of inquiry is interesting. I don't want to mystify 9/11 by suggesting that there are evil secret agencies out there with fantastic new technologies that we peons don't know anything about, because that can make people feel powerless. But at the same time, we have to take a look at all hypotheses that have evidence supporting them, and also we have to admit that there's a lot out there that we don't know. We have to be humble and say, hey, you know, I know this much. I know that the official story is a crock. I know that these were obviously intentional demolitions, but, you know, I don't know all of the mechanisms that were used to produce these demolitions. And so I'm going to keep my eyes and ears open, and I'm going to try to give a fair hearing to people who are proposing alternative explanations or supplementary explanations beyond the ones that the majority of people in the 9/11 truth movement accept at this point. And so that's why I'm going to be at the conference, and I'm interested in hearing from people like Jerry's clients, Morgan Reynolds, and especially Judy Woods, who's done some work hypothesizing that there may have been a directed energy component to the demolitions. So that sound like a reasonable approach to you, Jerry?
It does indeed, and an excellent summary and overview of the process that we all have to go through in coming to grips with what happened. And it is a fair statement that, you know, none of us can say with certainty that we know what happened, but we can say with certainty that the official explanation given to us thus far is noteworthy for just how false and for how misleading those reports are. And that has resulted in our having both the opportunity and I would say a duty to challenge those false explanations. Now, I need to mention once again two companies that are at the heart of the military-industrial complex, and that who, at least based on the number of people assigned to work with NIST, appear to have taken a leading role in the work that that NIST did in the report that they have issued, and also in the ongoing work on Building 7. And those two companies are Science Applications International Corp. and Applied Research Associates. These are little known companies, perhaps, to the general public. However, in military circles, these two companies are well known. SAIC, I'm told, or actually not so much told, I've seen a written report to this effect, but SAIC has more employees who have security clearance classifications than does any other company in the U.S. And the range of their work and of their activity not only puts them right at the epicenter of the development of directed energy weapons, Kevin, SAIC is also a leading entity in, guess what?
Don't tell me. Okay, do tell me.
Psychological operations.
Really? Interesting, because you know, I've always wondered if there might be a little overlap there, given that as far back as the early 1960s, Jose Delgado was stopping charging bulls in their tracks just inches away from him by pushing buttons that triggered firing of electrodes in their brains. And then he did the same darn thing using a remote source of EMF, that is electromagnetic energy, in, I believe, the 1980s. So clearly there are ways to use various kinds of energies to affect behavior and consciousness. And it would be interesting that a company that makes directed energy physical weapons would also be making directed energy mind weapons.
Well, it's not just directed energy. The nature of psychological operations extends into many other areas, including, and now this is a segue into the third RFC that that I have the honor of being involved with, and that is the one that was submitted by Dr. Morgan Reynolds that directly attacks that component of the NIST report that seeks to incorporate the claim that jetliners crashed into the World Trade Center and did so from nose to tail, wingtip to wingtip, without degrading, without crumpling, without bending, and plowed right through the World Trade Center as though the World Trade Center were butter, and the jetliner images that we saw were a hot knife.
Now, there are two issues at stake here. We should be clear about this. The arguments that some or all of the videos that we have seen of these airliner crashes into the towers, mainly the North Tower, are fake or altered. That argument does not necessarily prove that there were no such airliner crashes.
Well, here's the issue that is presented in Morgan Reynolds' RFC. The contractors for NIST actually received money and then did prepare simulations of the jetliner crashes into the World Trade Center, and those simulations did in fact incorporate the video imagery and did not vary from the from that which was seen, namely that you had aluminum tubes have the ability to go right straight through the steel reinforced steel structures that were the World Trade Center.
And of course, the argument that this is possible, which I've heard from people, from qualified scientists in the 9/11 movement, as well as, of course, the authorities, is that at very high speeds, at say 500 miles per hour, the aluminum of the plane would be so it wouldn't stand up to the steel. But it would stand. It would go through windows and around the steel frame, and so it would basically find its way around the steel into the building. That's the argument that I've heard. And of course, I've also heard Morgan Reynolds refuting that argument, and I've looked at a couple of these images that actually make me suspect that Morgan could be onto something. You know, there are a couple of these images that seem to show some real serious anomalies as the planes are disappearing into the building prior to the explosions.
Yes. So that indeed is the nature of Morgan Reynolds' attack on the official explanation. And I shouldn't say attack. I would say challenge of the official explanation and the work that he is doing.
Well, that'll be interesting to see where how far he's come and where he's going with that. We'll be right back. This is Kevin Dara talking with Jerry Liefhardt, the attorney who's filed an NIST request for corrections. I just requested to correct myself, and we'll be right back. All right, welcome back to the last 10 minutes here of Dynamic Duo. We're heading into a weekend of fun and frolic and hopefully some serious 9/11 truth work. You know, I'm basically an activist, and so my interest in 9/11, once I figured out it was an inside job designed to shred the Constitution and launch a war against the world in general and the Arab Muslim world in particular, a Hitler-style war of aggression, totally unjustified. One thing, I figured all this out, you know, I just said I've got to do something about it. And that's my main focus, is what can we do? That's why I'm spreading around these thousands of stop of 9/11 inside job roll banners designed to stop the next 9/11. They're going to say inside job ? And you can put them up in case there's another such event. Hopefully that will stop the PSYOP before it starts. If you want to get these banners, they're extremely cheap for such large, good-looking signs. You can get them at Mujca.com. That's Mujca.com, the Muslim Jewish Christian Alliance for 9/11 Truth. Well, I am also interested in what really happened on 9/11, and I'm interested in the possibility that there may be some high-tech shenanigans associated with 9/11. David Griffin, of course, believes that one of the purposes of 9/11 was to get money for the Space Command, which has its mission in your face from outer space. That is the complete dominance of planet Earth and nearby space through massive technological military superiority by weaponizing space. And this is a huge, important issue. And at the conference in Madison, August 3rd to 5th, which you can find out more about at 911scholars.org, we will have some experts on the weaponization of space, notably Alfred Weber, And but some other folks there are also interested in the issue, and this does play into the whole issue of these exotic weapons companies, ARA and SIAC, that you were talking about, Jerry Leaphart. Jerry, still there?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, Kevin, in this last segment, I think we have sort of set the table for the conference next weekend in Madison. I would certainly like to thank you for calling attention to that conference, for calling attention to the many knowledgeable people from all facets of the 9/11 truth movement who will be there, and hopefully we'll also have a good cross section of the public who may not be as involved at the activist level as you or my clients Ed Haas, Judy Wood, and Morgan Reynolds are. And yourself and Jim Fetzer, and other members of scholars for 9/11 Truth are, and it should be a good opportunity to see where we are, to assess the state of the art of 9/11 Truth, and to plan important next steps in how to go forward with the challenging task that we have before us, which literally does involve, stopping an illegal war and stopping nefarious, criminal cabal that has taken over many of the levers of power and of influence, in the United States.
Yeah, Jerry, I've been reading some history about the Nazis recently in preparation mm-hmm. for my next book, and man, it's amazing how these neocons, the 9/11 criminals, just took every Nazi trick and tweaked it. It's amazing.
Yeah,
they're following
yeah.
the same script.
Yeah, they really are, Kevin. And so that is the task before us. 9/11 is, in many respects, the symbol of just how far the effort to gain control of the apparatus of governance of the United States has progressed. As I said, have done a good job of summarizing where we are and the task that we have before us, Kevin. And so to the extent that I've been able to help further that discussion with you this afternoon, why it's been a pleasure, and I'd like to thank you for inviting me to come on the show.
Well, I sure appreciate your input, Jerry, and I appreciate the effort you've put into the NIST requests for corrections. I'm really interested in hearing about this information that you've uncovered, these companies, ARA and SAIC, high security clearance, high-tech companies that seem to have been involved in as you say, looking or helping
yes,
NIST explain these events when, in fact, these companies have expertise that would suggest that they might very well have been implicated in the events.
Exactly.
And that's, of course, the picture we've had since 9/11 is the very people who seem the most complicit are the ones investigating themselves, and they're the more complicit the individuals, the more likely they are to get promoted after 9/11.
Exactly.
The people who, according to the official story, must have been the biggest screw-ups, people like Dave Frasca in the FBI Radical Fundamentalist Unit, who stymied, I believe it was 80 calls from the Minneapolis office saying, "This Masawi guy, he might want to fly a plane into the World Trade Center. Please give us a standard warrant so we can look at his laptop." And, these warrants had never been turned down before, these FISA warrants. And Dave Frasca turned him down 80 times. And guess what? Dave Frasca was promoted after 9/11. And this is the kind of situation that really just, shows what's going on in this country when the people who are investigating 9/11 are the probable perpetrators, and when the worst screw-ups, according to the official story, get the biggest promotions. I think your idea that there's a rogue network out there that's undermined the standard command and control and government bureaucracy and corrupted these government agencies is a very accurate one, Jerry. I appreciate your sharing that idea. Boy, it'll be great to see you at the conference.
Looking forward to it, Kevin. I guess one final word on the Space Command issue that you mentioned. For decades, an awful lot of money and effort has been put into the concept of weaponizing space. Directed energy weapons of a certain type, especially those that are of the particle beam variety, are ideal for space platforms. And although it is illegal under the Outer Space Treaty, of which the U.S. is a member, believe it or not, it's illegal to put weapons in space, but the United States over the last several years has made it very clear that it is uncomfortable with the way in which the Outer Space Treaty is being interpreted, and it is opposed to any additional modifications of that treaty, let alone the passage of additional treaties that would have the effect of placing more specific restrictions on the placement of weapons in space. That is something that the United States currently opposes, which lends some credence to the fact that, in all probability, Kevin, there are already directed energy weapons in space.
Indeed, although the argument has been made that there is no way a space platform could take down the World Trade Center because they couldn't possibly deploy enough energy from there, at least by any systems that are currently known. It's interesting that two of the most obvious 9/11 suspects, Richard Meyer and Donald Rumsfeld, are associated with being massive boosters of the Space Command, people who were, just screaming and yelling that they needed lots more money to weaponize space. Mm-hmm. And guess what? After 9/11, the limits were off, and the money has been flowing exponentially towards that ever since.
There's a good website done by the Federation of American Scientists that you might be familiar with, Kevin, and we can pass that along to the listeners as well. That has done an excellent charting of the history of the development of space weaponry.
And what's the site?
It's FAS.org, Federation of American Scientists.
FAS.org. That's an easy one to remember. Okay, well, thank you, Jerry Liefheit. It's been a good show, and I look forward to seeing you next Friday in Madison, Wisconsin, for the Science of 9/11 conference. What's controversial and what's not? Go to 911scholars.org to find out more.
See you there, Kevin.
Okay, see you, Jerry. And see all you later. Have a great weekend, and I'll be back same time, same channel, next Monday. So this is Kevin Barrett signing out right here on Dynamic Duo at GCNLive.com. See you later.